This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour, final hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. I don't want to waste a single second teasing anything else that's coming because I don't care about anything else that's coming. I'm talking to Buddy Lilly right now, and I'm loving it. Veteran of the Rhodesian Bush War. All right, buddy, you just got over there. You get yourself signed up, and you are leaving, you said, out on a convoy. What does that mean? Why a convoy? Where
Before
are you going?
I went there. I was in Salisbury when I had the first interview with this lady from the courts. Mm-hmm. And she sent me to Umtali, which used to be a stepping off point when people were going into Mozambique and Beira for, at one time it was a vacation spot. But anyway, when I asked her, how do I get there? And they said, well, most people hitchhike. And I said, oh, cool. I kid you not. I got a taxi, went to the hitchhike spot, and you took your place in line, if you understand. You know, the first person there got the first ride that came by, et cetera, et cetera. And my first ride that I got was with a gentleman, older gentleman, who's my age now probably, but back then. And I had a heck of a time understanding him with his heavy English accent. And he had a heck of a time understanding me with my Southern accent, which is pretty much gone now. But it was a nice ride. He told me about, pointed out things. He had a pristine Sterling. I'm sure you're familiar with that. Mm-hmm. 9mm. Just like a little submachine gun. Mm-hmm. He had had for years with a whole bag of magazines. And he just riding down the road by himself. Glad to have somebody come along in case they got into a bang-bang shoot-em-up. He let me off at a place called Rasapi, which the Rasapi River is one of the notable, believe it or not, in the middle of a war. They were doing tube rafting, down there, which kind of surprised me. So in between there, I had gotten a ride with a gentleman from Birdseye Farms. He offered me a job, but again, I passed that one up because, again, I wasn't familiar with nothing. So anyway, by the time I got to Rasapi, I was getting a little tired, and along comes I believe it was called a Rhino, Army armored vehicle with four young guys in it, and they stopped back up. Give me a ride. I said, this is very cool. So I'm heading into Salisbury in this thing, and these guys would have been called up for terrorist call-up. Oldest one was 18.
Jeez.
They were 16, 17, 18 years old, and they took me into town. And from there, I hooked up with the CID lady, and she in turn hooked me up with Anglo-American / Force Management Service, who hired me and put me on convoy duty, escorting timber trucks, believe it or not, in and out of the Tamanimani Mountains between Umtali and there.
Okay, so walk me through convoy duty. What is your job? How many vehicles? What is the danger out there? The environment? Walk us through it.
Okay, I went on as an A gunner with one of the Mashona who was carrying the mag, you know what I'm talking about, belt fed. And we drove around. We didn't stay in one place in the convoy. We had a little, I think it was an Isuzu, and two guys in the front seat, me and the Mashona in the back with the 7.62 mag. And we may ride a mile back from the convoy. We may go up and get in the middle of the convoy. And it was really dangerous because they would spread out too much. I haven't got a, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. On that.
Yeah.
and it was really uncomfortable. They would get hit after I took over as a XO at one of the companies, but right after I left them, the convoy got hit. But we would go in, we'd leave Umtali about 1 o'clock. We would go into Melceta, which was where one of the sawmills was at. And then from Melceta, we'd take one truck and go to Tilbury Estate, which was where I would end up being stationed at. And there we would leave an empty tractor trailer and pick up one of timber that had been cut. Come back, they had a hotel there that the company owned, cost us $2 a night. We stay there, and about 6 o'clock in the next morning, we'd be back on the road, back to Umtali, get there about 11 o'clock, 2 hour turnaround, and it was back on the road again.
Buddy, you say, again, speaking with Buddy Lilly, veteran of the Rhodesian Bush War, you say after you left, the convoy got hit. What does that mean? What happened to it? Who did what?
They got ambushed. It was not far from Melceta. I can't remember everything, but it was scattered out, and they hit one of the chase trucks like I was on. Nobody was hurt, but the guys had to give up the truck and get out of the way. They had to hit the bush and run. The other guys opened fire, and I found out that G3 brass line can break the windshield. I don't know if you've ever had that experience or not in Iraq or not, but brass flying into windows will break it. Mm-hmm. None of the security people were hurt. One of the civilians lost a leg. It blew his hit him below the the knee and messed him up.
Oh, all right. All right, buddy. You leave this job. What's your next job and why did you leave?
They needed an XO at the security office at Tilbury Estate, where we would go into at night. And they asked me if I wanted to do it. And I liked it. It was, I was uncomfortable with the way the convoys were acting. And if you try to control African drivers, forget it. They don't know but one speed, and that's fast. They're racing each other. And some things in different countries don't change. So I went there, and they asked me if I wanted to stay on. So I went on and had my gear brought up from Umtali, and I took over as number two in charge.
Buddy, is that where you stayed for the remainder of the war? Where'd you go from there?
I stayed right there. I came home on R&R. We can go back and fill in later, but I came home on R&R after the peacekeeping forces came in. Mm-hmm. And once I got home, I got a call. Don't come back until we call you. Because it wasn't looking real good.
Okay, so this is still, I'm assuming, 1979.
This is still 79, yes, sir. I got... I was on the convoys for about 10 days. So when they asked me if I wanted to take over as XO on the militia company or whatever you want to call them. They were all Mashona. There were two, myself and the other OIC. He was white. And then the rest of them were all Mashona.
Mashona. All right. Now we'll continue this story actually right there in a moment. Mashona, because this is something that's the obviously more appropriate word. I believe that I think I called him Shauna. I don't know, whatever. But either way, we're going to come back with Buddy. We'll find out about these guys. It's just two white guys, all black guys. I told you this wasn't a white versus black thing like our dirty commie media in this country sold everybody. But we'll be back. Get the rest of Buddy Lilly's story, veteran of the Rhodesian Bush War. Hang on.
I've got an animal inside of me.
This is Jesse Kelly. You're listening to The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday. Remember, you can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Back with Rhodesian Bush War veteran Buddy Lilly. Okay, Buddy, you take over as XO. Sorry, that's executive officer for any civilian types who don't understand what that means. You take over as XO of a, quote, militia company. Were there a lot of those?
I had, I had 60 Moshona in my company. I used the term militia. They called themselves guards. I had 60, give or take. Some of them stayed at the compounds where the Europeans lived at. We kept 2 to 3 there all the time. You know, they lived there. I mean, they lived with the families. They ate with the families. They stayed up and guarded them all night long. And we stayed around 60 personnel, give or take.
All right. So how are you getting around the country, and what are you doing? What are you doing with these Moshona tribesmen that you're now basically in charge of? What are you doing?
Well, as I mentioned, we had people that stayed at the European compounds where the Europeans lived at. Whites, they called them Europeans over there. They were the permanent security. And then we ran patrols, mounted patrols, foot patrols, usual same stuff that you do anywhere else. Make an appearance, let the bad guys know you're here, and see if we can get you to come out, which they did come out.
What kind of fighters were they like, Buddy? Good, bad, idiots, brave? I'm talking about the enemy.
To be real honest, what I'm going to tell you I got from some of the guys that I work with, which a couple of them had been Rhodesian Light Infantry. The hardcore were you know, the ones that went to Korea or Russia or somewhere for training, were pretty hardcore. But the rest of them were just criminals. They didn't care who the government was. They had an AK-47, and they could go out and rob, steal, rape, do what they want to, and it was all for liberty, you know, to liberate the country. So if that gives you an answer.
No, it does. It's not a surprising answer at all. Commies are always recruiting these dirtballs in any society to go butcher wonderful people. There's no question about it. What was the attitude of the Rhodesians when it came to international things? Meaning, was there hatred for Britain, for America, for selling them out? Did they ever bring it up? Did they not care?
Yes, kind of. I got checked out, vetted. They went through my gear. They thought I was CIA, which I wasn't. I mean, if I was, I would tell you right now. I was on my own. And I'm not, as I told one of the guys, I said, man, if I'm CIA, I'd be here to do something to help you. You know, and that ended that. Britain, they hated the Brits. You can imagine what happened when the British send in people for the peacekeeping force. That was not pretty.
What happened? What was this peacekeeping force? What happened?
We're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but when the Lord Carrington, Jimmy Carter, I believe, all of them got together and they came up with this plan, there was going to be free elections, which didn't happen. New Zealand, Australia, two other countries sent in supposedly peacekeeping forces, which was a laugh. Because when these guys traveled with our convoys, they traveled locked and loaded. What does that tell you?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I came home in R&R, because we had been shut down. I couldn't do any patrols. My last patrol, which is a good story, I'll tell that in a minute. But we were shut down. That was it.
Tell me about this last patrol.
Well, let me go into the day-by-day routine.
Please, go ahead. Please.
And work into everything. I hadn't been there too long when, for what reason I never understood, the terrorists would go in there and try and set the forest on fire. It was a timber farm. There was 30,000 acres of Georgia pines there. That's a hard to believe. Jeez. But they had brought them in years before, and they grew exceedingly fast and healthy up there in the mountains. So we had to go out and provide security for the company workers, the sawmill workers who were trying to put the fire out. And that ended up most of the night. About 3 o'clock in the morning, my E5 in charge, I call him E5. I have one sergeant major, and everybody else were foot soldiers. He came in and a little bit of humor, stood at attention in my room, and sounded like Rudyard Kipling with his famous, "Sir, I believe they want you at the fire." Perfect English. So we haul Bud out, get down there. The estate manager's supervising. This is 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and they kept setting little fires different places. And it weren't burning good, but they were trying to set them. So he told a sergeant and another couple other Mashona to take me to a certain area to get out and fire some rounds so that one group may think that the other group was in contact. Which, okay, that worked. So we did that. We come flying back in through there. I stopped we had what they call Leopard. It was a supposedly a, you know, explosion-proof vehicle. And we stopped, and there was an explosion. The Army had sent a reactionary force from downtown Melceta, which is not a very, but besides, it's not very big. But they had an armored detachment there, and they come up, and they hit a mine. I could see, first heard an RPG go off, which came from the weapon, came from the Army vehicle they were firing. And I caught a glimpse of some green tracers, and I hauled ass. Well, let me go back to my sergeant again and for a little humor.
Well, hold on. Pause for just a moment, buddy. I hate to interrupt you mid-story, but we have a hard break. We'll come back and we'll go to your sergeant major as you're in the middle of a firefight and landmines and everything else. I hate to interrupt you at this point, but hang on. We're going to commercial. We'll be right back with Buddy Lilly. Hang on.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on an amazing Wednesday. I'm just nerding out right now with veteran of the Rhodesian Bush War, Buddy Lilly. I've never done an interview this long on this show, and I'm loving it. All right, buddy, the floor is back to being yours. Got yourself in a firefight. There's RPGs, green tracers. That means AKs, by the way, for people who don't know. And the floor is back to being yours.
So my sergeant, same one. He stands up behind me. I'm driving. And he says, "Sir, I believe it is an ambush." And I said, "I'm driving. You're in charge." So I had to go up about 25, 30 yards, take a left on the road. And I went nose to nose with the Army vehicle that had hit the mine to avoid free fire. So in between all this, it wasn't funny then, it's funny now. They cut loose with a G3. I had three guys in the back. Two of them had G3s, and one of them had an FN, the sergeant. They're firing over the top through the canvas. And you know where all the brass is going?
Oh.
You've been there before.
Yes, sir. I have one down my flak jacket right time. I've never disrobed so fast in my life.
As you know, in ambushes, it's over in 30 seconds. When I pulled in, everybody quit firing. And 2 minutes later, everybody's out front. They're shaking. My guys are with the Mashona Army guys. They're shaking hands and exchanging cigarettes. And the driver gets out, and he says, "Oh, you're the Yank." I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "Glad to meet you, you know." He said, "This is my fifth mine I've hit." And I looked at him. I said, "This is the fifth time you've hit a mine?" He said, "Yep." And I said, "Jesus." And I was deaf. I was still felt being burnt. And these guys were just so relaxed. You know, you automatically, adrenaline goes down. Everybody's cool. So we went back and had breakfast. What can I say?
Rhodesians, did you find them to be good troops, buddy?
Yes. The ones that I, all the guys that I worked with on the convoy, one of them was still active duty from the Rhodesian Rifles. He had been in the bush so long, he had months of leave. So they gave him his leave. He was a sergeant major, and he was working for the company while he was on leave. One of the guys had come from RLI, and I saw his record. He, in 1 month, he did 27 jumps.
Good
How many guys
grief.
You know have done that many?
Good grief. That's more than most guys do in their whole career. Buddy, I have to ask you about your last patrol. Tell us that story.
When the peacekeeping forces came in, the estate manager said, look, we're going to have to quit. We can't go out there. Well, about a month prior, we'd had them come into one of the villages, and unfortunately, we couldn't catch up with them before they got to the TTL, which is your tribal trust land. We even put a blocking force out and just couldn't get to them. There's a lot more to it, but that's just what it amounted to. So with payday coming up, he said, let's go out. He said, go out and let the terrorists know that we're looking for them anyway, because they like to come into the villages on payday and help themselves to whatever money they could get. We were doing a short run when my point guy looked and picked up a letter. It was a fresh letter. It had been opened, but it was a terrorist writing each other back and forth. And he says, they're here. I said, oh, great. So I called headquarters. We had radios. They weren't real good, but we called, and I said, we're going to follow them. So here we go. I only had two. I had five guys with me. I had two canteens of water with me, and that was it. And we got on a game trail, got going down the hills. First thing I was walking point at the time. First thing I came across was a trip wire. Well, it wasn't a trip wire. It was a snare. My guys explained to me that the terrorists would snare an animal and just leave it. And when they needed food, next time they come through, they kill it, which is, that gives new, well, you know, that slowed us down. We found, it was a nice trail, but we found one or two more of those. It's been so long. And we came out of the brush on the side of a hill a little bit. And next thing I know, my tracker was up front. Steven was his English name. He was a Mashona, and he was like a goat. He could just walk up anything. Jesse, I looked down, and there was a stream down there, and it must have been 200 foot straight down rocks. And I have never felt my gut come up in my throat like it did right then. Two reasons. I didn't want to fall, and we were wide open. Here we were following, terrorist spore. And now all I could think of, I had screwed up big time. I got this whole patrol right here in the open. And we had about 15 foot to go. And when we finally got up there, I would say we all just kind of laid down. And by then, all two canteens of water was gone. This has been 6-7 hours. Just got comfortable. Steven looks up and he motions at me. He put his fingers up on his collar, which to them meant, for me to come forward. There's a goose coming up the river, the stream. He's not armed. And, of course, they want me to take him out. And we didn't know if it was a terrorist or whether it was a villager. We sat there watching. He was going along doing something in the water. And I could have got him. It wasn't over 150 yards. I could have popped him. But I didn't want to shoot an innocent, although they weren't supposed to be there. I said, okay, let's see if we can slip down and capture him, which was not a good idea because he probably had friends, but it was a good idea at the time. We knocked a rock down the hill, just like in the movie.
Oh.
I motioned the guys to go in defensive position. I said, oh, we are so screwed. That was two mistakes I'd made the same day. And nothing happened. We waited. Finally, we eased on down the hill. We got to the creek, and myself and Steven stood guard while the rest of them got in the water, and then they stood guard, and we got down and got cooled off and everything. Headed up, we had lost radio contact, finally got up on a hill where I could reach the base, told them where we were. They knew where we were at, so they said, wait, we'll send our guys out to get you. And we sat there talking. And it was very sad because one of the guys asked me, he said, they call me Mr. Bud, where are you going? You can go home when this is over. And I looked at him. I said, guys, all I can tell you to do if Mugabe wins, take your weapons and go to South Africa. Travel at night. Because they could not go back to their villages, Jess. If they did, they'd be killed. Plus, their families would be killed. Because they had been, security people. So by then we got on back and we couldn't do anything. It was just sit around, go, just kill time and, twiddle your thumbs. So that's when I asked the boss about going home on R&R for 30 days or whatever. Of course, they gave me a wish list of stuff to bring back, which I knew I couldn't do, but I would try anyway. And that's about how it ended. Got home and got a call. So there I was, broke, unemployed. I tried to get my job back with the government, and that didn't go over real good. That's another story, Jesse.
Buddy, Lily, I just cannot thank you enough for giving us this perspective. It's something I know people are just wrapped up fascinated by it. I've been fascinated by it. Thank you for, one, your service to our country, service to a wonderful country like Rhodesia, for giving us some time. Appreciate you very much, Buddy Lily. Semper Fi, my friend. Merry Christmas to you and yours, by the way. Merry Christmas.
Best to you, and I'm very humbled that you let me on your show. I thank you very much.
Appreciate you, sir. I'm so nerding out right now. Chris, if we had a longer show, we could have kept him on longer. Why can't you arrange that? Don't you know people? It's really Chris's fault. I know at this point in time, your T levels are probably through the roof after spending more than an hour with a guy who fought in Vietnam and Rhodesia. But for the rest of us, we have to maintain it, okay? Testosterone goes down every year now. It's awful. There's a bunch of reasons for it, but it's awful. Male testosterone is cratering. Are you sad a lot? Are you tired a lot? Is your brain foggy a lot? Your T levels are going down. Change that. Reverse that naturally. A male vitality stack from Chalk is going to change your life. It's going to improve every part of your life. Go to choq.com and get a subscription. Ladies, you are not forgotten. Female vitality stacks for you. You want more energy? You want to feel good? You are 90 days away, probably 60 to be honest, from feeling like a different person. Make your 2026 the best year in years. Chuck.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, final segment of the Jesse Kelly Show on a magnificent Wednesday. You can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. What a freaking week it has been already. We're cruising into the end of it. We're like 10 minutes away from Donald Trump addressing the nation. Now, presidents are almost always late. You can be late when you're the president of the United States of America. But at 9 p.m. Eastern, we'll see if the rumors are true that he's essentially going to say Venezuela's got it coming. Jewish producer Chris disagrees. That's what he's going to say. I'm not saying I think it is. There's a lot of rumors going around. We'll find out. Let's hope by the time I sit down tomorrow, we're not at war with Venezuela. What, Chris? Chris said Congress would never declare war. What do you think? You live in a country where that still matters? They don't even ask Congress anymore. They just decide to go do it whenever they want to do it. It's just whatever. Jesse, we need to import all of Western Europeans who hold our ideals and that are about to lose their lands. We will need them to reconquer our own, and then we need to conquer Canada as well. If Mexico looks at us wrong, they'll be next. I love Canadians, and there are so many hardcore right-wingers in Canada, and they are outnumbered impossibly now. They were always outnumbered a little, but now I heard an incredible stat, and I don't want to misquote it, so let me just clarify what I'm about to say may be incorrect, but I think it's in the last 4 or 5 years, Canada has had a 20% increase in their population, all foreigners. They just completely, look, I've told you that's what they want to do. That's the plan. You outnumber your patriotic citizens so they never have a voice and you get to maintain your tyranny forever. The ultimate patriotic issue is immigration. You can tell how patriotic you are based on how you are on that issue, because to the communist, it is everything. Why do you think they talk like this?
How do you think it ends? How do you think the era ends?
Girl, this is what I'm hoping, that midterms people come out and vote like crazy to switch it over, and then the reckoning comes. That's what I want. All everybody that worked for ICE, I want them in jail. I just want a reckoning.
Everybody that works for ICE, I want them in jail. They all talk like this. That Democrats will now, without even, like, it's not like they're, it's a text message that got exposed. They'll step up to the microphone in public and they'll announce that immigrants build America. Just right in your face. They don't hide it at all. Again, here's Steve Cohen.
But they're arresting people simply for the offense of being in the country illegally. It's not right.
They're mortified that we're deporting people who are here illegally. Anyway, as far as bringing in people who share our values, it's a fun thing to dream about. It will never happen. Trump did a little of it. He brought in some Afrikaners. Remember Afrikaners? Well, actually, it's a good time to bring it up. What happened in Rhodesia? It's happening already in South Africa now, too, where the ruling communist elite there, they've declared that white people are the enemy, white people are evil, and white people are under assault over there. So, and the white ones there are called Afrikaners, and Trump brought a bunch of them over here. Notice you never hear a word from them. Notice they're not all on welfare. Notice they never run to the news and talk like this.
I mean, the biggest worry of the new executive order is that it does separate families. It doesn't create an exception for U.S. citizens to have their family members be able to come visit and celebrate milestones with them. And so this is a very cruel.
They just show up, find a job, go to work, grateful. Who you bring in matters a lot. It matters a lot. Every culture is not the same. Every culture is not equal. There are disgusting third world thieving, raping, murdering cultures out there all across the globe. And the number of people you should bring into your country from those cultures is zero. You go and go murder anyone you want in your country. You stay out of my country, but not us. Because we have a Democrat Party and Republicans like James Lankford, we've thrown open our borders and brought these barbarians into your classroom. That's why they ate your cat last week. By the way, do you have a Byrna compact launcher yet? Because these savages are all throughout our society now. Don't think that your small Midwestern town's safe. Oh, they're going to bring 8,000 people from Haiti and park them in your kid's school next week. Do you have something that will stop a bad man from hurting you? Does your daughter? It's really, really, really important to understand how dangerous our society has become. And Byrna is legal everywhere because it's not lethal. It shoots pepper balls or tear gas balls or kinetic rounds. Private security companies carry these things. SWAT teams carry these things. Byrna saves lives. It's already saved lives of my listeners. BYRNA. Byrna.com/Jesse. Byrna.com/Jesse.
And now,
here's a headline.
By the, go, you know the thing.
headlines we didn't get to.
Abdul El Said, by the way, he's running for office in Michigan, not Lebanon, I swear, proposed commuting all sentences for juveniles facing life in prison. The plan would grant early release to some of Michigan's most violent killers. It's almost like they're trying to put violent criminals back into society. No, that couldn't be it, right? I'm sure they're just naive. New Canadian school rule forces kids to wear helmets to play in the snow. Oh my gosh, I wish I could tell my father about that. Hydrogen plays part in global warming, according to a study. A reminder that there is no global warming. No man caused global warming. The Earth's weather patterns are exactly that, patterns. It heats, it cools, it does its thing. But the very idea that man is destroying the Earth is an idea that's going to kill a couple billion people one day. Trump's marijuana move has Democrats nervous, according to a CNN analyst. One might say they're paranoid. Foiled again. Fentanyl dealer shows up to court with more drugs. Hey, that's where the criminals are. You can hardly blame him for that. House Republican who voted to impeach Trump in 2021 won't seek re-election. Golly, we have some freaking loser dorks. Rubio says he will not run in 2028 if J.D. Vance enters the race. That is, not only are they friends, that's just a realistic acknowledgement from Rubio that J.D. Vance is going to be very difficult to beat in the Republican primary. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. I don't even know what we're going to do. We'll have fun, though. That's all.